Welcome to Principal Center Radio, bringing you the best in professional practice. Here's your host, director of the Principal Center and champion of high performance instructional leadership, Dustin Bader.
Welcome everyone to Principal Center Radio. I'm your host, Justin Bader, and I'm thrilled to be joined today by my guest, Renee Molina. Renee is an administrator in the Saddle Mountain Unified School District in Arizona and a participant in the Instructional Leadership Challenge. And when I saw some of Renee's comments on the Instructional Leadership Challenge website, I knew that we had to talk and I had to have him on Principal Center Radio.
And now, our feature presentation.
So Renee, welcome to the show.
Pleasure, Justin. It's indeed an honor. Thank you.
Well, Renee, in your comments on the Instructional Leadership Challenge, one thing that really stood out to me was the way you've applied one of the big ideas from the challenge, which is the high-performance triangle. And the high-performance triangle, as I know you know, combines three factors that lead to high performance. And those three factors are strategy, which is what makes us effective, tools, which are what allow us to be efficient, and habits, which are what allow us to be consistent. Could you talk a little bit about how you applied that to your work and then how you've extended that even beyond what we covered in the challenge?
Absolutely. As you kind of touched on those three vertices of that high performance triangle come together, that was something in my practice here as an assistant principal. A good example is our new electronic walkthrough form that we've just adopted here in our district. So that was the tool that I was using, and through taking this 21-day challenge, I learned to develop those habits of mind and habits of practice by getting into the classrooms 10% of the teachers every day. And then that strategy that I was employing was really leaving that substantive feedback that was going to get teachers engaged in a dialogue with me or with each other about their practice and kind of so that was how I applied it to my work. But it was interesting. One day, probably about 3 weeks ago, I was in a particular teacher's classroom, and this teacher, she's a superstar. Her kids typically get high marks on, you know, standardized assessments, and she's just a really all around solid teacher. And I was watching this particular lesson on, I believe it's syllabication, and I noticed that was the tool as I saw it at that time that she was utilizing, and then the habit of the way in which she wrote it, and then she broke it apart, and then she would place a hand underneath the chin as the students would see, hear, and feel the syllables as they're spoken. And then the strategy which she employed was really that sequencing of all of those together, coming with, you know, addressing different points of the room, the word wall, the dot camera, the going to the whiteboard. It was very strategic in that sequencing. So it kind of struck me as I'm actually seeing that high performance triangle in action for ineffective instruction. And so as I was speaking with her later in the same day, I asked her if she was aware that she was utilizing this and this high performance triangle, and she didn't. She wasn't familiar with it. So I kind of walked her through what I just did with you and you know, asked if she'd be interested in sharing that with other staff members. But over the course of the next couple of days, I spoke with a couple other teachers and kind of got their take on that high performance triangle as well. And so I really want to take that into a different direction here on our campus. But one of the things that struck me as odd is how frequently with those electronic walkthrough forms that I would leave the comments on, and unfortunately, you know, much of this, or the electronic format, it kind of has those many of the checklists, basically everything that you advise against in the leadership challenge, which it's really good information. But in those indicators, you know, we may have objectives, post and refer to, check in for understanding, you know, cooperative learning structures, all these. But so teachers, rather than focusing on the feedback, some of them would look at that and ask about the specific indicators. Did I see this or did I see that? Or, you know, if I'd stayed longer, I might have seen the other thing. So I try to steer the conversation away from that and gear it more towards, let's start a dialogue rather about the feedback, you know, what it is that the students were doing in the classroom, or some of the things that I'm thinking about how this might be applied or that might be applied. But it kind of it resonated with me that we may be conditioning the teachers to kind of think more about just a specific tool, and that's kind of what I'm referring to as the indicators on our walkthrough form. We may be conditioning them to just think about those, and in terms of, you know, am I going to hit all these indicators so that I can you know, be deemed effective or efficient or what have you. And, you know, I think they cannot operate in isolation. It really takes, you know, that habit of mind to be persistent in. Like, for instance, if I'm talking about the cooperative learning structures, just a teacher employing a Kagan structure in their lesson does not, you know, effective instruction make. But if they employ a Kagan structure along with that habit of mind of, you know, I'm going to employ two of these every day or one per lesson, depending on if I'm teaching multiple subjects throughout the day or the same subject several times a day, I'm going to make that habit of really employing one of these cooperative learning structures every day. And then that strategy of knowing, you know, which one to employ and at what time. So is this lesson more conducive to numbered heads together, or is it more conducive to round table, or just all those tools that that Spencer Kagan gives us? You know, are we going to employ them with the right strategy and then with that habit of mind as well? Is one of the things that I think is that really it takes all three for us to, you know, we can't be talking about just a specific tool or indicator. It really takes all three is my kind of walk away from connecting this high performance triangle to instruction.
Well, Renee, that reminds me of a lot of professional development that I had early on as a teacher. And in my district, we focused on these thinking maps that were for things like comparison, you know, doing compare and contrast, doing the kind of properties of something. They had all these different mind maps that were really useful for teaching students a lot of different kind of analytical thinking and analytical writing practices. But the way that I initially used them in my classroom, you know, as kind of a new teacher going to a Saturday workshop and then trying it on Monday, was to just kind of pop them in as activities. Okay, well, some point in the lesson today, we're going to do one of these mind maps. I know we're going to because I need to practice it and it's good for something. But what I didn't have was that overall perspective of how they fit together. And I really appreciate the way you've applied the triangle to that daily work of teachers, of figuring out what's the strategy for this lesson, you know, that I want students to master. What are the tools that I'm using to help them, you know, develop the knowledge and skills that they need. And then I think the really neat piece can come in with a habit when students start to use those things independently. You know, when you ask students to say compare and contrast, and you see them making that mind map that's for comparing and contrasting, that's kind of exciting to see that happen.
Indeed, and you know, the kind of I touched on this previously, but it frequently is the case again as we may be conditioning teachers to kind of think about just this specific tool that I'm going to hit, because you know, in our state, I'm sure as in maybe in your state and others, we are compelled by law. You know, we've got to be able to, or we got to evaluate teachers, and in our case, 50% of the teacher's evaluation comes from those observations that right. Administrators perform. And so, you know, teachers may be looking at it as a checklist point. You know, I need to make sure I want to be deemed as effective or highly effective, so I want to make sure I hit all these indicators and at least show the presence of them. But I think, as you refer to, that habit of getting the students to be able to function with this particular tool, that's the ultimate goal in them, and that's something that can only be created through this habit of mind that we are going to purposefully insert, you know, this specific tool here and this specific tool, you know, there. So it's really got to be that habit that's formed in order to get the workers working and with that efficiency and that effectiveness that we that we want. But you know, I can truly appreciate where teachers are coming from. You know, they've got this is their livelihood. They want to make sure that they are, you know, if they're putting all this work into their profession, they want to make sure that they're deemed as a highly effective category. But I think again, if we look at it in terms of just hitting these checklists down the line, we may be, you know, parsing it out too far rather than bringing it together. You know, these informal observations and these walkthroughs, they are formative in nature. We should be you know, highlighting some of these points, but thinking about how we're going to bring them together. And I keep bringing it back to this high performance triangle because it's something that really resonated with me. But how can I bring these together so that I can create, if I'm being observed as you know, the observers are not seeing, you know, checking for understanding on a regular basis. How am I going to develop that habit of mind that compels me to now frequently check for understanding, do those spot checks throughout the lesson, And then what am I going to do at the end of the lesson to kind of tie all this together? So it's got to be a habit of mind that can only be, I guess, created if it's not something that is innate in us. It's something that we have to plan for, and it's something we have to be purposeful in inserting. And then, of course, the last piece is that strategy of tying it all together with that effectiveness and that efficiency. So I think I can appreciate where teachers are coming from in that, and I think that we as the instructional leaders, we need to bring that together and say this is formative in nature. You know, this information, this feedback that we're giving you, don't look at it so much in terms of trying to hit every one of these indicators. Do some of these well and employ that high performance triangle. And you know, as I heard frequently, you know, you take care of the nickels and dimes, and the dollars are going to take care of themselves. You know, that instruction is going to turn around if you are purposeful in employing this high performance triangle. Really, in my opinion, in just about everything that we do in this profession, if we employ this high performance triangle, I think that the connection can absolutely be made that will make for effective and efficient, you know, instruction or leadership or what have you.
Sure, and really in any area of school operations. And I appreciate the way that you positioned that kind of checklist thinking as more of a planning tool, because, you know, as you were describing kind of what the most effective teachers do, you know, they're not necessarily going to do everything that's on a long evaluation checklist during a lesson, but it's something they've thought about. And as I think about the best book that I've read on making useful checklists, which is the Checklist Manifesto by Atul Gawande, he talks about how they've developed checklists in aviation and in surgery to reduce errors, to increase reliability, and very rarely are they used in terms of kind of a spot check observation. Like, you wouldn't walk into surgery and expect to see hand washing going on during surgery, because the hand washing was supposed to happen before the surgery. And the way that the checklist is used is to make sure that you've thought of everything, that you've gone through the steps that you need to, not so that you can be kind of spot checked. And I think we've actually trained teachers into some of these bad habits, as we've been discussing, with our walkthroughs with these really long evaluation instruments. And what we saw happening in my district, we'd go through and do a learning walk. You know, there'd be an assistant superintendent and several principals, and we'd walk into a classroom, and immediately, within 10 seconds, you would hear the teacher say, "Okay, turn to your elbow partner and talk about what we just discussed." And then they'd do a turn and talk, and then there'd be some additional kind of elements to that strategy. And that was a strategy that had been taught in district professional development. It had been emphasized quite a bit, and people knew, okay, well, if people are going to come in my room and observe, they'd better see a turn and talk. And as we saw that happening, we realized, okay, this is silly. We've actually pushed people into doing something that's not part of their lesson plan, that maybe they thought about it and decided not to include it, but then when we showed up and surprised them, they shoved it back in because they knew we wanted to see it. And that's not what we want to do as instructional leaders. That's not the kind of influence we want to have. It's at that planning stage, it's at that kind of purposeful decision-making stage that we want to help people think about these things. So I really appreciate the way that you put that in describing the work that you do with teachers.
Indeed. And I think that was, I like the way you put that. In fact, I just wrote down some of the notes as you were speaking. Again, I'm learning right here, but about the Checklist Manifesto, that was a fantastic point about the analogy of the surgeon and the hand washing. You know, we cannot see everything all the time. It's just, you know, what should we see at that time? But I think as I reflected, you know, during this 21-day challenge, on my practice as I started as an instructional coach there at the high school, you know, it was frequent the case that I would provide teachers that feedback, which was really nothing more than that checklist, just out of my own ignorance or inexperience. But those things that I would point to would be that low-hanging fruit, those easy indicators that I can point out. You know, it's easy to see if checking for understanding is going on. It's easy to see if, you know, the objective is posted and referred to. So you put that stuff down because it was convenient for me as an observer. Mm-hmm. Rather than trying to be a little bit more prescriptive in what I'm thinking about or what the students were doing, this is where I think I've learned to connect, you know, again, many of the tools that you provided in this challenge, but specifically this high performance triangle, to really make my feedback more beneficial to the teacher, At least I would hope, and so that ultimately, you know, we can get the students to engage with the content at a higher level.
So one thing I heard you say earlier that I really appreciate is the idea that our feedback needs to be the beginning of a conversation. And I think we both moved from the secondary classroom to being elementary administrators. And I know one thing that that was a big shift for me was going into, say, a primary classroom and needing to provide feedback on literacy instruction to a teacher who'd been teaching literacy for 20 years. And if I just went in with a checklist and said, you did this, this, and this, and you missed this, this, and this, and that was kind of it, I knew I was missing out on a huge opportunity to grow as an instructional leader, to learn what good instruction looks like from the best teachers and have those great conversations and actually be much more helpful in prompting people's thinking than if I just went in with a checklist. So I appreciate what you said about that. And I'm curious, what has been your experience as kind of a lead learner making that same transition from being a secondary instructional coach and teacher to being an elementary administrator?
Boy, that's been a real learning curve indeed. You know, I think I recall back when I first was notified that I got this appointment here in our district. I reached out to an administrator friend of mine that he too went from high school math teacher to being an elementary administrator. And he said, you know, Renee, it's the adage is true that, you know, high school teachers care about content and elementary teachers care about kids. And so I chuckled at that, but it was really enlightening. But it's kind of as an aside, that was one of the first eye-opening comments that I heard and experienced here. But that said, connecting this back to the conversation about, you know, providing feedback and the like and getting that dialogue started, that's frequently in my conversations with staff members, that's where I'm trying to take it. Because as I tell them, you know, I don't care if you're a first-year teacher, you've got more experience teaching elementary math and elementary reading than I will ever have. I'll probably never be an elementary teacher. So I can't give you necessarily specific strategies about how to what direction you should have taken that lesson. What I want to do is start you thinking about you know, what it was that you did well and what it was that you, if you had to do over again, what would you do differently? Because that's where the professional learning is going to take place, in you reflecting on it and in you kind of just having that, even if it's an internal debate, you know, with yourself, what would you do differently? If it's something you want to share with another teacher or with me, then that's where, you know, ultimately I'd like the conversation to go. Because again, you're your best coach. You can do a lot more for yourself reflecting on it than I can, you know, again, as you say in the challenge, you know, me giving the teacher something they either already know or don't care about, that does nothing for them. So I think that's where I ultimately want to go with this, with that feedback that I provide to teachers.
Well, that's powerful. And I think it takes a lot of self-confidence and humility to say as a leader, hey, you know more about this than I do. You have more experience teaching this subject to these students than I ever will. And I'm still going to take very seriously my responsibility to help you grow, just as, you know, a track coach is not necessarily the fastest runner in the world, and their runners are almost always faster than they are. But I'm still going to develop my expertise, and I'm going to take you through a process that will help you be the best you can be. Well, Renee, it has been a true privilege to speak with you today, and I have just had a blast. If people want to get in touch with you, I know they can see your comments on the Instructional Leadership Challenge and dialogue with you there. But if people want to get in touch with you directly, where can they reach you?
Indeed. First of all, Justin, thank you. It's been more of a pleasure for me than I'm sure it's been for you. That said, my email is the best method to reach me, and that is renee.molina@smusd90.org. That's Renee with one E at the end, renee.molina@smusd90.org. Either that or posting comments on the Leadership Challenge. I periodically go back and look at other people's posts. It's really educational on for me to pick up on that.
Fantastic. Well, again, thank you so much for joining us on Principal Center Radio, Renee, and have a great day.
Justin, pleasure. Thank you again.
And now, Justin Bader on high-performance instructional leadership.
So, high-performance instructional leaders, what were your takeaways from my conversation with Renee Molina? I really enjoyed chatting about the Instructional Leadership Challenge and about how he's going well beyond what we originally envisioned for the High Performance Triangle and applying it to all aspects of teaching and learning and what's going on in the school. So if you are interested in going through the Instructional Leadership Challenge, I want to encourage you to sign up at instructionalleadershipchallenge.com. And you can read the comments of our thousands of participants who have gone through the challenge, and you can see what other people have posted. You can engage in dialogue there, and you can just go through the process. It is a 21-day self-paced challenge, and best of all, it is completely free. So sign up at instructionalleadershipchallenge.com. You can also access the Instructional Leadership Challenge daily videos through the Principal Center app, which you can find in the App Store for your iPad or iPhone, as well as the Windows Phone Store and Google Play for your Android device. So I hope to see you in the Instructional Leadership Challenge, and I look forward to hearing from you.
Thanks for listening to Principal Center Radio. For more great episodes, subscribe on our website at principalcenter.com/radio.